Most of us know that Yellowstone was the world's first national park, and you probably also know that there is nowhere else on Earth that has the number of geysers, cauldrons, and other geothermal features. You probably also know it is one of the finest wildlife reserves on the planet, up there with the likes of the Serengeti and the Galapagos. It is a park with seemingly endless space, but that's actually not true. Wildlife need to roam to winter destinations outside of the park, and that is becoming harder and harder for them to do. Joining me today is Lisa Eller. She is the Marketing and Communication Director for the Idaho chapter of the Nature Conservancy. Lisa is helping to lead the charge on an initiative to further conservation efforts and awareness of the need to preserve the land around Yellowstone National Park, commonly referred to as the Greater Yellowstone Area. Lisa, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
I'd like to start with this idea of this multi-year effort that the Nature Conservancy has been working on, which involves also the Wyoming and Montana chapters, correct?
Yep, that's right.
So tell me what the initiative is and why the need for it.
So the initiative, as you kind of set the stage for, is focused on the Greater Yellowstone Area, which is like this flower-shaped area that radiates out from Yellowstone National Park. It's a place of incredible biodiversity, unique geological features, but is also a place where it is threatened by growth and development to natural places. So the initiative is the Montana, the Wyoming, Idaho chapters working together to do primarily three things: work with landowners and ranchers to conserve open space so that wildlife can move through these areas. And second, monitor native species, restore habitat. And third, work with communities to manage fire risk.
And so let's talk about this, the wildlife factor, because I think there just may be assumption that all of this wildlife just lives in Yellowstone all year round.
Right.
And that's really not the case. They do roam,
right,
and they go outside of the park. You can't really contain that.
Right, that's right. There's no check-in and check-out
at the front desk, right?
Right. Yeah, all of that, you know, this 32,000 square miles of habitat, which at its core is the Yellowstone National Park, but it's much bigger than that. And you're right, all the wildlife that live there need to move in and out to get everything they need to do to survive and thrive.
And so has there been this issue, as once again, growth, it seems to be a constant thing we talk about, that I believe I read that within the Greater Yellowstone Area, something like 10 of the counties are some of the fastest, they're some of the fastest growing counties in the country. They border Yellowstone National Park.
Yeah.
So with that, if you're building, animals get displaced. I mean, we see that here in the Treasure Valley.
Right.
So is that part of the issue?
Yeah, that's part of the issue. And we're not necessarily against development. We just think that there's a smart way to do it. And we think we can grow without sacrificing the places that we love. You know, the phenomenon that you're talking about is nationwide, but in Idaho, we're seeing the fastest growth in what we call the wildlife-urban interface, or the WUI.
Yeah.
And that's the areas where development meets these natural, undeveloped areas. It's that borderline. And in Idaho, that increased 72%. Between 1999 and 2010.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how are private landowners and ranchers receiving this idea of working with the Nature Conservancy to make sure that wildlife can use their, basically just use their property to roam from one location to another?
Many of the landowners that we work with have been in the area for generations. They share our love for wildlife. They share our love. They've been there and seen, you know, in one example, the landowner from Henry's Lake, she remembers just seeing one light across the lake. I mean, they've been there that long, you know, and so they share our love and our values. And that's why we're able to work with them to do this work.
And why is them keeping this migration corridor so critical?
You know, people come to the area because it is, it's because of the wildlife. There's few places on the planet that are like the Greater Yellowstone anymore. It's one of our last intact places, not in the nation, but globally. It's a celebrated place. And so without that, that's such a key component of the characteristic and the history and you know, the beauty of the place.
I'm speaking with Lisa Ellert, Marketing and Communication Director for the Idaho Chapter of the Nature Conservancy. We're talking about preserving critical land in the greater Yellowstone area. Lisa, one of the first things you commented about was the sustainable fire community.
Yeah.
And that's part of one of your initiatives mm-hmm. as well. Talk to me about why that is important as well when we talk about the greater Yellowstone area.
Yeah, so, you know, the statistic that I mentioned earlier about 72% growth in this wildlife-urban interface, it's important that, you know, as we grow, that we work with communities to help them understand what the risk is of fire in the area, how to adapt, and then by also getting their engagement and support, you know, for fire risk in general, that maybe that'll parlay into support for forest health in general, which benefits everyone.
And if some people remember, in 1988, we saw the largest mm-hmm. fire in Yellowstone history.
Mm-hmm.
And it took years and years
right.
for the park to recover from that.
Yeah.
So when you talk about a fire resilient community, what exactly is that? We've heard that term once again when you talk about that urban interface.
Yeah. So a fire-resilient community is one that understands what the risks are, have taken steps to adapt their property to make sure that their property and the people living there are the safest that they can be when a fire comes. And so a fire-resilient community is also one that's collaborating, working together with their neighbors, working collectively as a community to lower that risk.
Because in this day and age, it's not a matter of if we'll see another fire mm-hmm. in the greater Yellowstone area, but when.
Right.
How did the Nature Conservancy decide that making fire-resilient communities was important as a priority, you know, making it a priority?
Yeah, so forest health as a whole statewide is a priority for us, and engaging communities and getting support from communities is integral to all of that work. The Island Park Sustainable Fire Community that we've played a part in, and by the way, has many partnering organizations. You know, it's a big collective, collaborative effort. The other two pieces of our forest health work are science and policy. And with our science, we've been able to identify places where our national forests need restoration, and public land managers have been able to use that. And on the policy side, we're advocating for legislation to give the U.S. Forest Service the resources that they need to fight fires and also do everything that they do for our public lands.
And the community of Island Park has been very involved in this. And for people mm-hmm. who don't know, Island Park is a really small town mm-hmm. outside of West Yellowstone, one of the entrances into yeah. the park. It is beautiful. I lived yeah. in eastern Idaho. I think Island Park is a beautiful area of the state. Why have they been so involved? Because they are small.
Yeah, they are small. I think it's some of the leaders from the local Forest Service units and the firefighters have really led the charge. They've been in the community a long time. They have long-term relationships. They're well-respected members of the community. And I think from that, the fruits of the Island Park Sustainable Fire Community kind of grew. And that wouldn't happen, obviously, without the residents mm-hmm. and their incredible participation. I was just up there in Island Park a week ago meeting one of the landowners who have done things to adapt his property. And it's just great to see not only his desire to do that, but also get, other neighbors to do the same.
And tell me about what are some of the things that you do to make your property fire resilient, especially if you have, you know, big acreage like a lot of folks do in
yeah.
that area of the state.
Right. And like you mentioned, you know, in these places, a lot of the houses are built within forests. So one of the big things is just removing excess fuels and branches and trees and stuff from the ground, and that also creating a hard surface around their house with gravel or concrete. And then also changing your traditional cedar shingle roof to aluminum or steel. And then also clearing out the space under the house so that fire isn't going underneath and up, things like that.
So is there an increased risk for fire in these, you know, in the greater Yellowstone area because of climate change?
Yeah, I think in part because in part because of climate change, we're seeing, I think all of us that live out in the West, fire seasons that are hotter and longer, and, you know, conditions are drier and warmer, and with that comes forest susceptibility to insect and disease outbreak, and then eventually megafires, which are these types of fires that we're seeing that are really large, uncharacteristic fires that are really damaging.
And when we see fires in these areas, even if they're not within Yellowstone Park, how does that affect the wildlife?
Well, the forest provides food, it provides shelter, it provides habitat. So when that habitat is lost, you know, there's a void. And so that habitat that the forest provides is the foundation for everything. That's why we think it's so important to take preventative measures to keep the forest safe, or to, you know, take steps to return it to a more healthier state, because it does support all these wildlife.
Well, I want to thank you for coming in today and talking about this. Lisa Eller, she is with the Idaho chapter of the Nature Conservancy, talking about protecting critical land in the greater Yellowstone area, as well as fire sustainability. So thank you so much, Lisa, for coming in. Really appreciate the conversation.
Thank you, Gemma.